Okay, welcome to Being Smart, Top 10 Ways to Prevent Becoming a NIDA Unnecessarily. Okay, going to start out by just saying welcome to this year. And wanted to say the reason why we decided to do this year over anything else in Taras HaMishpacha is because I just find as a Kala teacher, and I find as other speaking to other Kala teachers and speaking to the women who run the Neely Hotline, that so many times women become a Nida unnecessarily, and if they just understood or knew the halacha or remembered the halacha or understood some very simple things, this could have been prevented many, many times over. And a lot of times I'll get a phone call saying, you know, I wasn't sure what to do, so I did this, you know, and it's like, oh, why did you do that? If you just didn't do that, if you just would have remembered, then you would have known, and we wouldn't be in this situation. And none of us want to be a NIDA when we don't have to be, obviously. And even, you know, if you say, well, it doesn't bother me, well, maybe it bothers your husband, then it's about both of you. So we really want to try, and Halacha wants to try, to not put us into the status of NIDA when we don't have to be. So that's the reason for this year. And if you really know the halacha, the halacha of Nida and the halacha of how you become a Nida and how you become out of the status of Nida, it's almost impossible to become a Nida when you don't have to be. So with that, I want to say that there are times that you do have to be a Nida. You know, that's just the way life works. And those, I'll mention the four top ways, and there's really no way of getting out of this. So obviously the top way that you must become a Nida, and there's nothing you can do about it, is when a woman gets her period. We can't stop that. That's just the natural way Hashem created our bodies, and we can't not look and pretend we don't have our periods. We all know what it means to get a period. We remember what that's like. We know what that feels like. We know when we're expecting it, and when we're expecting it, and when it comes, that's it. You're a Nida, and nothing to talk about. You know, to determine exactly what day it came, you know, that's something maybe you can discuss and something you have to figure out. But when a woman gets her period, she is a Nida, and that's for sure. The other times a woman will become a Nida for sure is after childbirth, and nothing you can do really to prevent that. After childbirth, and it's not even Dam Nida, it's Dam Leda, but still it doesn't matter. She is in the status of Nida before then, but she becomes a Nida from whatever time she's determined to become a Nida, usually when she's contracting hard enough that she can't walk on her own, or some people say, there's different times when people determine when you become a Nida when you're in childbirth, but from that time until you go to the mikvah, you are a Nida, and also nothing you could do to prevent that, and nothing to talk about there. The last two ways that you will definitely be a Nida is, one thing is called a hargasha. Now, I don't know, we sometimes use the word hargasha to describe a flow. We say, did you feel a hargasha? We say, you know, a rav might say, did you feel a hargasha? Or someone might say, did you feel a hargasha? And that's very loose term to say, did you feel a flow? But I'm not talking about that type of hargasha. I'm talking about a halachic hargasha, which is, it's very rare, I'm told. I've never experienced it myself, but I have met women who have experienced it. And that is sort of the feeling inside of a woman's womb opening up internally and feeling of internal flow. Okay. And when that happens, a woman will know, that's a weird feeling. I felt that before. I never knew what that was. And in those situations, that's a woman who feels a hargasha, who has a hargasha, and she would have to do a bedika, and she would have to ask a shaila to say, is this a hargasha? And if it is, that could put her into a status of nida. If she's the type of woman that gets hargashos, then she will be a nida from that. But again, it's very rare, and I personally have never experienced it. I know one person, like I said, who has, possibly, and I've never met anyone else who has, but there are definitely women who have. And the last, okay, so those are the ways that you definitely will become a Nida, and nothing we can do about it to stop it. Okay, now really this year could have been called Think Before You Act. It's just another way of saying be careful, okay? Let's just not do before we, you know, let's not make decisions on our own if we're not sure, okay? So what are the top 10 ways? I divided them into 10 different categories. Some of them are interchangeable, but we'll talk about that. So the way number one, which is on the source sheet, you don't have in front of you, but you can just write the word colored, or you can write colored, colored, colored. Question.
Oh, can I suggest what the fourth one would be? But I don't know.
Yeah.
Is it after a marriage is consummated?
Yes. Okay. That wasn't even what I was thinking about, okay. But yes, that is a way.
That's a sure way.
That is a way. Okay. But not necessarily, because it depends if for the first time. for the first time, a virgin, right? For the first time, consummating her marriage, yes, will become a nida for sure, a virgin for sure. Okay. Way number one is just to think of the term colored. Colored is very important because basically there's three categories that will, you know, okay, if you are a nida for sure from a period or childbirth or a hargasha or something like that, if it's a for sure, it's a for sure, and it doesn't matter what you're wearing or what you're doing or what time it is or anything like that, you're a nida, and that's all that there is, okay? However, there's also something that's called a kesem, a stain, okay? Sometimes women have stains or spotting in between periods, and depending on the color of the stain, the size of the stain, and where you see the stain, on what fabric you see the stain, could determine whether a woman becomes a nida because of a stain. And that's not a period, that's a stain. Okay? So basically, if we follow this list, almost in every situation, we will not become a nida because of a stain. Okay, so we're talking now not about periods, we're talking now about stains. Whenever I'm referring to anything now, I'm going to refer to kesamim or stains or spotting. Okay, so why do I say colored? There's three criteria that would make a stain into a problematic. It would be the color of the stain. So that would be the colors red, black, red for sure. Anything red, we know what red is red, bright red. Okay, everyone knows what blood looks like. So red is for sure going to be a problem. We'll get to colors in a minute. The size of the stain has to be a certain amount. And where you find the stain, on what color fabric. Now, color fabric, third criteria, is going to cross out the other criteria, because if you are if you see the stain on colored fabric, you don't have to worry if it's the size of a US penny, which we'll talk about, a gris, and you don't have to even worry about what color it is. If you see the stain on colored fabric, most of the time it will not be problematic, which is why I say colored, because if you're wearing colored, or if you see the stain on a colored towel, your colored sheets, your colored underwear, your colored a slip, any fabric that's colored, you don't even have to sit and say, how big is the stain or what exactly color is it? It doesn't matter. It cancels it out, which is why we tell all kalas, stay away from white unless it's your Sheva Nekiyam. Does that mean I can't wear a white shirt? No, it doesn't mean that. But if you're tucking your white shirt in and you know you might be spotting, be careful, because you don't want that white shirt to go into a place where spotting might occur. Okay? Things that we don't think about are pantyhose crotches. Okay? Many times women have gotten into trouble. Pantyhose crotches are almost always white, and so we want to be careful about that. Now, tights in the summer, okay? Some women have gotten into trouble with tight crotches. I get this question all the time. Now, there's half tights that they have, interestingly enough, when you look at it, I had to take these tights actually to a Rav and have him look at the crotch, and he said, this is not white, this is gray. Now, it was a very light gray, but a Rav took it out into the sun and said, this is not white. White is white, okay? So, yeah, question.
Not to be silly or anything, I'm just...
There's no silly questions, so don't worry. There's no such thing.
If someone's used to wearing tights every day and they like the tights that they have, could you just, I don't know, like, literally grab a Sharpie and just go over?
You could stain the tights. You could stain them. Some people say use tea and stain them in tea, you know, in tea, or turn them inside out, you know, or wear a black panty liner. There's lots of ways, but just these are things to keep in mind, that all of these things count, where we might think, okay, I'm not sleeping on white sheets and I don't have a white towel, so where else am I, and I'm not wearing white underwear, where else could I get in trouble? These are the things that people don't think about. A slip, definitely, you know, is a place that you could spot onto, and your pantyhose, your tights, towels, things like that, where you might not be thinking of it. Yeah.
Can you, assuming your tower, can you just not look at your
tights? Yes, we're going to get to that in one
Even
second. Yes, we're going to get to that. That's the next one. Okay? So very good. We're going to get to that in one second. So way number one is just stay away from white unless you are in your Sheva Nekiyam. Of course, if you are in your seven clean days, you must be wearing white and you must be looking, you must be aware, and you have to wear white underwear, and everything will count during your Sheva Nekiyam. Well, not everything, but things will count. You will have to look because you will not be on colored fabric. Okay, so way number two over here on my list says don't look. Okay, if you had that in front of you, then you would know that's coming up next. Don't look. Okay, now obviously you can't walk around with your eyes closed. So we are lookers. I don't know why. I don't know if it's humanistically we are lookers, or as women we are lookers, but for some reason we are lookers. And as much as I tell Kalas, don't look, don't look, don't look. When you go to the bathroom, don't look. When you wipe, don't look. Always, I looked by accident. Why did you look? I just had to. Why did you have to? I don't know why. So I am constantly telling Kalas all the time, don't look, and get used to getting yourself out of the habit of looking, because we are only responsible for what we see. So if we don't look, then we don't have to look, okay? So if you can remember that I'm wearing tights, and I might be spotting, I don't know, and even if I'm not, I'm just gonna take off my tights, throw them into the laundry, and not look, okay? If it's not my period, and I'm not expecting my period, I'm only responsible for what I see. So if we don't look, we don't have to know. We don't have to know, we're not responsible, and so if we don't look, and train ourselves not to look, and somebody said, what am I supposed to do, go to the bathroom in the dark? And I said, if that's what it takes, go to the bathroom in the dark. We all know what to do, we all know where the toilet is, you know? And I'm not suggesting that you go to the bathroom in the dark, but I'm saying, train yourself not to look at your body. You know, when you're taking a shower, don't look. When you're going to the bathroom specifically, don't look, and don't examine your clothes when you take them off. Especially if you know that you are a sparter or you do stain sometimes, definitely you don't want to examine things, because when we examine, we start to have to get into trouble or we have to go to the next level. Yeah.
What type of spotting? You're saying during 7 to 8 days?
No. Well, no. Spotting a kesem, a stain or spotting could happen. But from the time you finish your period until you get your next period, there might be different reasons for spotting. It could be for lots of reasons. It could be hormonal reasons. It could be a person's on birth control. It could be lots of reasons why a woman might stain or spot in the middle of, you know, not at a time when she's having her period. Okay, and if you never noticed it before, it's because you probably didn't have to notice it before, you know. And many girls will say, I don't spot, I'm not a spotter, until they get married, and then they say, oh, I do spot, you know, or I never spotted before, but gosh, I'm spotting now, and that's so weird. In my you know, 15 years of having a period, I never spotted, but why am I spotting now? Well, there's lots of reasons. Women's bodies change, your life situation, your childbirth, hormonal, birth control, anything could cause a woman's body to spot in between periods or stain, okay? So it doesn't always happen, but it could happen. So again, don't look, and we are only responsible for what we see. Now, we have to also balance that out with keeping healthy and keeping our bodies healthy. So, you know, God forbid if we have some sort of medical condition that is causing us to spot or stain or bleed, we don't want to ignore our bodies. So you have to sort of keep a healthy balance. Like, for example, if a person has a urinary tract infection, right? There might be some blood there from a UTI, right? Now, if you see blood there or you notice blood there and you say to yourself, okay, you know, I saw it, but it wasn't as big, and I saw it by accident, but it really wasn't as big, and it wasn't as red or whatever, and I'm just going to ignore it. You want to think to yourself, wait a second, am I experiencing any other symptoms besides the spotting? And there are other symptoms for a urinary tract infection. Okay, there's a burning sensation. There's other sorts of pains or something like that. And it's the kind of thing that if you're spotting and you're symptomatic in any other way, like you're not feeling like yourself, you want to call your doctor, your OBGYN, or you want to call your Rav and say, is this normal? Is this right? Is this a time I should be looking? Because you don't want to ignore, God forbid, a medical situation. So you kind of have to, again, when I say the shear should be called, think before you act. Don't just do it. We don't want to be dumb and say, I'm not looking and I'm going to ignore myself, because, again, the most important thing is to take care of our bodies and to be healthy. Okay, so that's not looking. The third thing on the list is understand your colors. Understand your colors. I almost brought in a box of Crayola crayons. I almost did, but I don't have a whole box. And I didn't feel like fishing through the big box of crayons to find the colors that I wanted. So, and you all know Crayola crayons, so we don't have to go there. But it is important to know your colors, because understanding your colors and the colors that your body produces, when you get used to them, you'll know the difference between red and pink and black and brown and orange and yellow and white. Okay, so let's talk about colors for a second. The problematic colors are red for sure. And what's red? Red is red, okay? That's red. We can find red in this room. Red is red. We know what red is. And when we see red, it's not going to be a question, is this red, okay? Pink and black are usually derivatives of red. And that's a color that it's going to be questionable, okay? Again, if we see those colors on colored fabric, we don't have to worry about it. And I want to say one caveat about colored fabric. There is sometimes a situation that if a person is spotting enough that there's so much bleeding on colored fabric that people give this as an example, but it's almost like, you know, the amount of 4 quarters or a dollar bill folded in half. The area of the blood is so much spotting, that's when you want to maybe call a Rav and say, you know, it's uncolored and it is a kesem, but it's not just a stain. It's like a lot of blood. What should I do in that situation? And then a Rav will guide you. Maybe your OBGYN will guide you, but you know, when it's so much staining, then that might not even be a stain. We don't know what that is, and we want to find out what that is. And that's something we might have to be responsible for. But anything that's smaller than that amount, if it's uncolored, even if it is fire engine red, it does not matter. We can ignore it. Okay? But if we didn't ignore it, and we did look, and we were wearing white by accident, or we put on a white slip, or we forgot, or any of those reasons, which we're not going to ever do ever again, but let's say we do, just in case, red's a problem, black, something that you want to ask about, and pink also. And that those are the colors you're going to want to have to, okay, sit and say, well, now I see that's a problematic color, what size is it, and what size is it? Okay, now, so red, black, and pink. Then there's the browns and the oranges. The browns and the oranges are tough to determine, are they browns and oranges to the red or are they browns and oranges to the yellow? So those are usually the most questionable colors that come to a RUV and usually where they will pass you the most. And those are things that, you know, sometimes you can determine for yourself. If you've asked enough times, you can know, okay, a RUV, I know this color. A RUV has already told me 100 times that this color is fine. So then you're probably okay. But if you're not sure, those are the colors that you want to ask about, like the browns and oranges, because we're just not sure. We just don't know. But a RUV is an expert, and they study these colors day in and day out and day in and day out. And they know the difference between brown and red and brown and pink and orange and yellows. Okay, anything beyond that, so like yellow, white, I say green and blue, even though people say green and blue, but you'd be surprised what comes out of women's bodies. And, you know, especially when you start noticing before you never noticed before, we produce all kinds of lovely colors, but those colors do not count. Green and blue are fine. So green, blue, yellow, white are not colors you have to ask about or worry about. No matter what how much size it is, it doesn't matter. It's something that's, you know, just coming out of your body, but it's fine. It's not blood. Oranges, browns we're going to ask about, and reds we're going to know this is a sign to be problematic, only if it's on white. Okay. Number four is know your sizes and shapes. Know your sizes and shapes. Okay, now when I say know your sizes and shapes, I wanted to point out, okay, I'm sure you've heard of the term a gris. Okay, over here, this black dot, this is exactly 19 millimeters, okay? It's pretty much the size of a U.S. penny, and that is a gris, okay? That is the amount or area that we have to worry about when we see a stain that is red on white fabric, okay? Now, if it's smaller than this, we do not have to worry about it. Again, even if it is fire engine red, we don't have to worry about it if it's smaller than this. Go ahead.
What's the size again? I'm sorry.
It's called a gris, okay? In English, GRIS, okay? It's 19 millimeters, approximately 19 millimeters.
Like and it's diameter and circumference?
Yeah. If we were to take it all and make it a perfect circle, it would be 19 millimeters. Okay? That's the area. Okay. About the size of a U.S. penny. So if you wanted to sort of take the stain and bring a U.S. penny, you know, a penny next to it, that's pretty much the size. Now, what's the problem? Obviously, we know that stains don't come out in lovely shape of U.S. pennies. They don't. They come out in all kinds of lovely shapes, right? They flow, they go up, they go down, they go all over the place. So that's why it's important to know this size, this volume, because we kind of have to determine from our stain, if we took our stain and we sort of put it all together, do we think that's the amount of a U.S. penny? Do we think that's the amount of 19 millimeters? Or do we think that size is bigger than that? And if you can determine that on your own and it's obvious, then you know that you are fine. If you cannot determine that and you're like, gosh, I don't know if that's a penny or not, that's something you'd have to bring to a rev and say, can you tell me if this is bigger than a gris or not? Okay? And that's why I say sizes and shapes. Now, one more thing about sizes and shapes, and then I'll get to your question, is that sometimes stains also come out and they don't touch each other, okay? They're not, you know, there's like different stains, okay? So we only count stains that touch each other. If they don't touch each other, then each individual stain we mark in and of itself. We don't have to put the whole stain together if they're not touching each other, unless it's on our body. On our body, we have to count the stain, Even if it's in different areas, we still have to count the area as if it's connecting. But if the stains are not connecting on fabric, then we only count each individual one and measure each individual one. Okay, so that's why I say sizes and shapes, because you have to know what a gris is. That's important. And you have to understand that they're never going to come out looking like that. So we always are going to have to determine how much stain is there. Is it as big as this? I don't have a penny on me, but is it as big as this? You had a question.
Okay. I've heard from Rabbi First that he had a Kabbalah from Rav Moshe Feinstein that any amount, like it could be a little tiny speck that's clearly blood in the toilet, is a problem, like automatic nida.
So, okay, so I would say the toilet is a different situation. Okay, okay, the toilet is a different situation. So the toilet is not fabric, okay? We're talking only about fabrics here. Sitting in the toilet bowl or on your skin, okay, is different. And I wouldn't ever say anything is automatic nida. I would say don't ever say automatic nida. Because we're gonna get to number 7, which is no joke, okay. And we're gonna talk about that. So never say automatic nida. If you see blood in the toilet bowl, call a rev and say, "I saw blood in the toilet."
Right. I'm just wondering if you happen to know if that's my first.
I don't know. Okay. It's very possible, but I don't know. Okay. Yeah.
I know that I did see once, Rabbi Tversky did find a hetzer for me. That it was fine.
Again, you're gonna ask two different rabbanim. You might get two different answers.
So, no, people, nothing's universal.
Right. People have a masorah from where they have a masorah from. And again, you have to choose your rav. And obviously, we don't choose our rav based on what we know they're gonna say.
No.
But whoever your paskening rav is, that's who you ask. But never just say, "Oh, it's in the toilet bowl. I'm a nida." Don't ever do that. Ask first. But again, we're not looking in the toilet bowl, right? We're not looking. We are not looking at the toilet bowl. We are not looking at anything. We are going to the bathroom with our eyes closed. Okay. Next thing, number 5, is don't do extra bedikos. Now, this I get a lot. And I don't know why it is that women sometimes flip out, are not sure what to do, and instantly do a bedika. Okay? I don't know why. It's almost like a, oh my gosh, I have to do bedika. No, you don't, okay? That is the absolute last thing you want to do is doing an extra bedika. The only bedikos you should be doing is for your hefsek tahara, your mochtachuk and your hefsek tahara, and during your shavan akiyim, once in the day and once in the evening, and then on your ona days, on your watch out days, once before and once after. That is the only time anything should ever be inserted inside you as a bedika, as a check. Okay? Never. And I'll tell you why. It's an important reason. Because there's a very big difference between what you see on a bedika cloth and what you see on other fabric. Okay? Even if they're both white. Anything you find on a bedika cloth, even a speck of red, is problematic. Okay? Even a pencil tip of red on a bedika cloth is problematic. So, why? Because if we see something on, let's say, underwear or fabric, it's questionable where that came from. We're not sure exactly where that came from. If you are inserting something into the vaginal area and you're putting it up there, you are doing an internal check by yourself. And it's we're much more strict on doing something, an internal check. Okay, so we never want to have to judge on a bedika cloth unless we have to. And one of the times that we have to, during a hefsek tahara, when we want to end our period and get into our 7 clean days. And during each of those 7 clean days, we have to check and we have no choice on a bedika cloth, but we never want to have to be judged on a bedika cloth because every color counts and all bets are off. The whole grist goes out the window and every single speck counts. And when I say speck, I mean speck. Okay? And you might say, "What is that?" But a rav will say, "That's red." And a rav will know what red is. So we do not want to do extra bedikos. Yeah.
I had a teacher in seminary that was saying that sometimes the nida period can be prolonged because for whatever, it just doesn't get as clean. So she was saying that when you think it's going to be the last day before the 7 clean days, she was saying there's no limit. You can keep checking as well. Like, because every check is almost like cleaning it, almost. Because all that matters is that by the evening, it's clean.
So thank God our rabbanim are very smart and our doctors are there to help us. And if a woman is finding that for some reason she can't get clean, then she needs to call a rav or a doctor and say, what am I supposed to do? Because biologically, we're supposed to finish our periods and be clean. That's supposed to happen. We're not supposed to continuously bleed and bleed and bleed. And if you are doing something, if the check is making you bleed, a rav will help you to say, you know what, the check is irritating you. Maybe only do one bedika on the first day and one bedika on the 7th day. Because you have to do a minimum amount, okay? And even if that is problematic, a rub will help you get there. And so will your doctor will help you get there because you should not be in a situation that you're continuously bleeding. The bleeding has to stop at some point.
I'm not saying like as if you're still bleeding. I'm saying as if it's just like, the lining is still there. It's just saying,
if
like,
the lining is still there, then you're not done.
Like,
well, okay, so this is, I'll tell you this, okay? Because I know you're not married, and I'll tell you this. When I teach kalas, I ask them, how long is your period? How long does it last? And they always say 4 or 5 days. And I always say, no, it isn't. You know, and they say, yes, it is. I know how long my period is. I remember since I'm 12 years old. It's five days and I'm done, right? But that's because you're not checking to see, are you completely finished bleeding? Because when we're single, we're finished when we don't wear pads anymore. We're finished when the flow is over. We don't care if there's a little spot here, a little spot there. It's towards the end. We don't care. We're just done that we're finished with our periods. But halachically, being finished with your period is a totally different situation. And halachically, you have to do an internal check to see that there is no spot, stain, trailing, and left. That it is over. Okay? And there was a separation between your period days and your seven clean days. So that you can get to your clean days. So you will see, God willing, one day, that you'll determine when your period is over. You'll see, and this happens all the time as kalas, they'll say, it's not over. I thought it was going to be over. I said, you see, wait another day. Or you might have to wait two more days. And they'll say, gosh, I had no idea. I didn't know. And this happens all the time because we don't know until we really have to check. Okay. Number six says, don't assume, ask, ask, ask. Okay. You don't have to ask, right? Ask three times. I'm a little OCD about that. But the reason I say ask, ask, ask is because, and don't assume, is because we are also very good at making assumptions and we get very shy. Okay, we get very shy, and I once had a girl, you know, a married lady who has a few kids. I asked her this question once because we were talking about the Neely hotline, and we were talking about women asking Rabbanim questions, and, you know, would it be more comfortable for them to ask women versus asking men and all of that, because when I was a kala, my kala teacher stressed, when you have a shayla, when you have a question, ask a rav. That's what they're there for, you know, and if you don't want to ask, have your husband ask, but somebody ask, right? And there was no hotline, and there was no, and we weren't accustomed to calling our kala teachers back and saying, what do I do? It was, if you had a question, you ask a rav. So I asked a friend of mine, I said, would you rather ask a rav, and this is today in 2016, would you rather ask a rav a question, or just be machmir for yourself for another day and say, oh, I'd rather just wait, I'm not sure if this is brown or red, I don't want to ask, I'm too uncomfortable to ask. And she said, I'd rather be more machmir for myself than ask a rav. And I was really in shock. And I guess it's because, as a kala teacher, I speak to Rabbanim in the city so often that for me it's like no big deal. It's like speaking to a science teacher about science, okay? It's like that's what they do, or a math teacher about math. It's like that's what they do. That to them it's all medical, it's all halacha, it's all academic. To them it's not like, it's not my body we're talking about. This is just halacha, okay? But we have to empower ourselves to ask, because why should we be anida for any longer time than we need to be, or for an unnecessary time that we shouldn't be, or that we're not? So we want to get accustomed to asking, and thank God today there are so many ways that make it more comfortable and easier for us to ask. The number one thing is you want to speak directly to a rav, because there's no misunderstanding. You ask the rav. It's your question. It's your body. You tell the rav all of the circumstances that are going on. I just had a baby. I just this. I just that. I just got my period. I just went to the mikvah. You're telling the rav exactly what happened to you. I'm on this birth control. I'm in that birth control. And I just saw this and I just saw that. And I'm bringing you in my shayla. A rav will tell you face to face. Yes, it's okay, or no, it's not okay. And by the way, halacha looks to be in favor of the couple being together. Halacha is designed to be in favor of the couple being together. And Rabbanim will always look for a loophole for the couple being together. The couple is meant to be together, and no one is machmir in this area. No one looks for chumras in the area of Taras Mishpacha. Are there some chumras? There are some chumras that people have, but in the area of paskening for couples to be together, we always try to look for, you know, the kula there, and so will the rav. Okay, so I would, number one, empower you and say, ask. There's no reason you shouldn't ask. And if you want the number of any rav in the city who paskin shaylas, I will give you all of them. I have them all, okay? And you can choose who you are comfortable with. If you don't want to do it, give it to your husband, you know? When you go to Minyan, could you please take this in and ask the rav? Or when you stop by the rav's house. Sometimes it's more comfortable when you're not asking and your husband's like, well, it's not my thing, so it's my wife's thing, so I don't care, you know? And sometimes husbands are just also, they're more accustomed to, this is halacha, so I don't mind asking. So either do it yourself or have your husband do it. if you're uncomfortable or your husband says, that's not my thing, that's your thing, and you're not comfortable speaking to a rav, then we have so many other options. You can call your challah teacher. You can call any challah teacher in the city. You can call me. Call or text me anytime, and I'm almost always available and near my phone, and I will help you out. There's the Neely hotline, which Baruch Hashem is doing amazingly, and if you, it's probably in your packets, the phone number. You can use the web. You can use a phone. You can use email, and everything is anonymous, and it goes straight to a trained challah teacher, and they take every shaila to a rav and say, what do we know about this? Unless it's something simple that they know already, that they've learned, but if it's a paskening shaila that has to go to a rav, they will take the shaila in for you, or they will tell you how to do it, or they will help you. So there's no reason today to be more machmir for ourselves than we have to be, because there's so many ways to ask in an anonymous way. Okay? Ask through a friend, ask through a college teacher, ask through the hotline, or empower yourself and just ask a rav and say, hey, it's no big deal. Hi, Rabbi First. He's on my speed dial. Rabbi First. Okay, we don't have speed dial anymore. But he literally, call Rabbi First all the time.
Is there a you?
Okay. Okay. So that's number six. Don't assume. Ask, ask, ask. Okay. Number seven says no joke. Okay. The reason I say no joke is because one of the ways we can become a Nida, and I think, by the way, this is the thing that I forgot in the beginning that will determine you a Nida, is declaring yourself a Nida. If you declare yourself a Nida and say, I'm a Nida, okay, I'm not saying it, but if you declare yourself one, then halacha takes your word very seriously. And so even when I say no, don't joke, a lot of times people will think, they're joking around the house, oh, don't touch me, I'm a Nida. Like, even that, you don't want to get into, okay? You don't want to get into that even as a joke, okay? Am I saying that will necessarily make you into a Nida? No. But if you say that and declare yourself that even as a joke, you have to ask a shayla, okay? Because halacha takes a woman's word seriously. Halacha trusts women to decide if they are a Nida or not, okay? And if you are, you are. But I would say never declare yourself a Nida unless you get your period and you know you are. Then you obviously have to tell your husband you're a Nida because he has to know. But if you got, or you know, if you're in childbirth, your husband will know, probably. Or you have a hargasha, then you'll have to tell your husband that also. But any other time, we don't joke about it. Halacha really trusts us. If we saw red, if we saw on our white underwear a big red spot the size of a quarter, then we know we're a Nida, and halacha takes our word for it. We don't have to ask a rav. We don't have to ask a witness. Halacha takes our word for it. Halacha trusts us as Aiden, women. So halacha will always take your word for it, so we don't do that jokingly. We take that seriously. Okay.
Does that also include when you say, like, oh, I think I might become, or
no,
oh,
I think I might become, or I'm not sure, is not I am. Okay? Is not I am. But even as a joke, I bring it up because jokes are, we think they're jokes, but halacha takes it seriously. And I'm not saying, again, that necessarily you will become a Nida if you said it as a joke, but you do have to ask. What do I do now? So we never want to joke about that. Okay. Number eight says bedika cloths versus other fabrics. So this is something that we did touch on, but I want to make it very clear because, again, this question comes up time and time again. And we talked about it before, but the halacha on a bedika cloth is very different than the halacha on any other fabric. Every size counts on a bedika cloth, even a pin size, okay? Any size counts. Now, you still have to look for the right colors. If you see a large spot of yellow on a bedika cloth, we know that's not a problem because we're looking for problematic colors, okay? Problematic colors, and the fabric we know is white, so that's already a problem. And then the size. Size on a bedika cloth doesn't matter. Every size counts, which is why we don't want to do extra bedikos, okay? That's going back to number five. We never want to do extra bedikos if we don't have to, okay? But if you see a size of a pencil spot of red on white fabric, that's not a bedika cloth, okay? Now, there are some other fabrics you have to understand. These are fabrics that are called fabrics that are not mekabel tuma. Okay, they do not, but some fabrics just are not mekabel tuma. Those fabrics are tissues, toilet paper, pads that are like plastic, pads and panty liners. Okay, those fabrics are not mekabel tuma. Now, why do I bring up those fabrics? Because Rabbanim will be much more makil on fabrics that are not mekabel tuma. Okay, if you see a stain on a fabric that's not mekabel tuma, there is much more room to be lenient. Now, you can't say, I'm going to wear a black panty liner, black is different, but I'm going to wear a white panty liner, and since it's not mekabel tuma, even if I see a spot, I don't have to worry about it. That doesn't go, okay? You still have to ask, But you want to tell a Rav or the hotline or whoever you're calling, where did you see it? I saw it on a panty liner. Many times a Rav will say, it's not makabel tumah, or how much blood did you see? Or, you know, even if it's larger than a gris, they might be more makel. Or they might say, oh, it's so much blood, it doesn't matter that you saw it on a tissue, you know? Or they'll say, oh, it was on a tissue and you flushed it down the toilet already? Okay, well, it was on a tissue, so it's not makabel tumah, so don't worry about it. You cannot paskin for yourself and say, it was on a tissue, I don't have to worry about it. Yes, you do. But you need to know that if you saw it on fabric that is not makabel tumah, then there's more room to be makel. So you want to tell a Rav, this is where I saw the stain. Okay, so there's the fabrics that are not makabel tumah, there's the fabrics that are makabel tumah, there's fabrics that are white, fabrics that are colored, and fabrics that are dark. Okay, now also, fabrics that are patterned, if any of the pattern has white in it, and you stain on that part of the white, that counts. So we, as cute as pattern is, we want to stay away from pattern or keep that for a time where it doesn't matter whether you are or are not looking, okay? So keep your very cute, you know, patterned underwear and put that aside. Keep it to solids. It's just easier that way. If darker colors are more comfortable for you, that's fine too. But just so you should know, light blue is not white and light gray is not white and light yellow is not white, okay? So you have to understand that. Don't assume, oh my gosh, these are light yellow underwear. I'm in trouble. They're light. Doesn't matter. Yellow is yellow and white is white. And a Rav will tell you the same thing. Okay, but if you think it'll make you less crazy, then get darker colors. Yeah.
I'm not trying to be cute, but what about light pink? Because I've been told by a Rav that was a problem.
Like, really? I never heard that.
Hair, he said are close enough to white that it's a problem.
So I've heard people say that you want to kind of, you know, stay away from the lighter colors because let's say they get bleached. Let's say that they get washed enough that they get bleached, that they are leaning more to the white. So then it becomes more problematic the more things lean to the white, okay? I don't think pink, solid pink, would be a problem. I've never heard that before, but maybe it is. Or maybe light pink, you know, is hard for a Rav to see. Maybe it's just harder to see. But light pink is not white, okay? Light pink is not white. Maybe a Rav will tell you stay away from it because it could become lighter over time as you wash it. You know, maybe that's the intention. I don't know.
Okay. I mean, like at the time, I was wearing that color because I thought it was the color.
Right.
Like, and, you know, and then I was like,
oh, if your Rav told you that, listen to your Rav. I personally have never heard that. That doesn't mean that it's not true. I personally have never heard that. I have heard that color is color and white is white, but things do tend to bleach over time. And, you know, your yellow underwear could become white, lighter, whiter, and become more problematic in making determinations. Yeah.
What about the other way around? Like, if you have white underwear that you use for your seven kiyum, but over time it gets stained or turns yellow.
Stained?
Can you now use it?
I think you can. That's something you could ask your Rav, definitely, and say, you know, when we're talking about white underwear, you know, what if it has staining from.
Does it have to be?
Right. I think it's fine because white is still white, but that's a good question. Mm-hmm. And you could definitely ask a Rav saying, how white are we talking about? Like my white underwear that's not pure white anymore because it has a stain on it, you know, that's a permanent stain. Can I use that during my Sheva Nikiyam? And that's a very good question, and that's probably a question that I'll ask after this year, okay? Because it's a good question.
Or say what other stains I'm saying, like on, like, not just that, saying that if you have other stains, like, that you're going to use, let's say it's still white enough, would you still say then would those affect? Like,
explain your question again.
I'm saying, like, if there was ended up, let's say that you had the white underwear and there was like the little drop on one part. Are you saying that if that was like one of those non-kosher stains, then later on, would you be able to use that same underwear? Or
that's what she's asking. Awesome. That's what she's asking.
No, I'm saying, like, she's saying though, even if it's like the yellow everywhere and that it's not white anymore, I'm saying, let's say the underwear is still white, there's just one drop.
So that's what you have to ask, is if the underwear is not pure white and there's a part on the underwear that's not, because during your Sheva Nikiyam, you're supposed to wear white underwear and not any kind of pattern or any kind of other color. So she's saying, and it'd be really be the same question, is if you did get a stain on a part of your white underwear that stained it, you know, is that considered white and can we use those underwear that are stained? Okay. I know Rav might say, I want to see the underwear. I want to see, you know, I want to see how white it is. And in that case, you'll probably say, in the garbage, and I'll go to Target and buy myself some new white underwear. Okay?
Use Clorox.
You could bleach. Clorox bleach does work. But there are some very stains, you know, that are determined to not go away. And, you know, that is a question to ask. And I, you know, it's never come up, so it's a good question.
When it comes to colored underwear that has, I mean, a lot of underwear I have is like,
pattern or colored or whatever that has like the white crotch, is that to be worn during the Shemitah Kiyum, or is that supposed to be worn during the week, but
you're
then there's still the white crotch?
You're supposed to wear fully white underwear, not just a white crotch, during your Shemitah Kiyum. So if you have pattern underwear that has a white crotch, you definitely can wear it when you have your period, because what does it matter? You're already a Nida.
It's not here, not there.
What?
It's not here, not there.
It's right. It's not here, not there. Exactly.
So you don't want to wear that throughout the entire month, though.
You want to just stay away from white.
Right.
When I was
you want to stay away.
I went and threw out like 3/4 of my underwear.
Right. And that's what we tell.
Like 10 brands
correct.
To find the one that
we tell. Right. We tell Colin. And right, because you don't realize, because who looks at the crotch when you're single, right? Who cares what it is? But then you realize, oh my gosh, all of this underwear that they sell in the store, except for one brand, doesn't have a white crotch, you know? And you start cutting out the crotches of the underwear that did have, you know, and then, so it does become a problem, but you want to. What?
There's not underwear that doesn't get worn.
Right, exactly.
Can
there is.
Can we talk about this for a second?
Yeah.
Jockey. You should just buy Jockey. I never buy.
Yeah.
For like $4.
Okay, so there's a suggestion, Jockey and not Fruit of the Loom. But, you know, wherever you are, just, again, be mindful. These are the things. Think before you act. Be mindful when you're buying undergarments because you want to, you don't want to get into trouble. Right. Oh, it's all hypothetical. Okay. We have two more points to get to, and I was told I only have 2 more minutes. So let's rush through if we can. Okay. Number 9 is OB-GYN exams. Time your tests. Okay. So the reason I bring up OB-GYN exams. No. This was the point. This was the one that could make you a NIDA. This was the point. Okay. So if we go back to number 1, if we are going to redo the whole audio, which we're not, but one thing that could make you a NIDA for sure. Okay, we talked about having a period, we talked about childbirth, we talked about a actual hargasha, and the fourth thing, which of course reminded me right now, is when the uterus is open, I don't know if it's a quarter inch, it's a certain amount that the uterus has to be open, whether there's blood or no blood. If the uterus is open, a woman will be in a status of NIDA. Okay, when does that happen? So it happens during childbirth, but it also could happen during certain types of OB-GYN exams. Now, not your general first-level pap smear or even second-level pap smear. In general, those are not considered tests that will open your uterus, so you don't have to worry about that. But let's talk about two things to think about when you're talking about OB-GYN exams. The one thing to consider in an OB-GYN exam is what's happening to me during this exam. Is this my routine yearly pap smear? And if it is, most post-game hold that your routine-level pap smear will not put you in NIDA. Okay? So I'm not saying every post-game, because I definitely have heard that there are some that waver on that, but most post-game hold that your first-level pap smear is fine and it will not put you in NIDA. So you always kind of want to find out what's happening. And you could ask that question one time to your Rav, does a pap smear put me in NIDA? If your Rav says no, you could take that shaila forever and never ask it again, okay? And if your pap smear goes to a second level, again, you ask that question once. I'm having a second level pap smear, is that going to be problematic? And I think in most circumstances, the answer will be no. But let's say there are other exams, I don't know what they're called, somewhere in my notes they are, but I don't have them right now, but there are exams where the uterus will have to be open, and your doctor, if she will probably have told you this already, she wants you to come in for this test, and if she doesn't, and she says she's doing this test right now, you need to ask her, wait, what are you doing, and are you opening the uterus, and you have to know that, and how much are you opening the uterus? Huh?
Like
the cervix. Yeah, not the uterus. The cervix, exactly. The beginning, the opening of the uterus. Okay? Is your cervix going to be open? Okay? And how much? Most of the time, in routine exams, it's not. But if there is a questionable, then you want to ask. And I have definitely been sitting in an OB-GYN's office on the phone with a Rav. You know, just saying, like, wait, before you do anything, I have to call my rabbi. You know, and she knows, and she's like, I'm waiting. You know, she knows. I'm not the first person to do that. But you want to know beforehand what they're using and what kind of instrumentation they're using, because if there's an instrument that could cause an abrasion, you want to know that too, because it's very possible that there will be bleeding after an OB-GYN exam that the blood you see is called dam maka, okay? It's dam from like an abrasion, okay? And that is not dam nida, and you will not become a nida from dam maka. However, it's hard for us to know, is it dam nida? Is it dam maka? So here's the next thing to consider when you're talking about OB-GYN exams is when to have your exam, okay? When is the best time to schedule an OB-GYN exam? And there's a difference of opinion. Opinion one is have it right before you're going to have your period, because if you end up becoming a NIDA, you're going to become a NIDA anyway in a day or two. So if that test is going to happen, if anything's going to happen where there's a test that's going to make you a NIDA, you're going to be a NIDA anyway, Okay, that's one opinion. The other opinion is have it right after you go to the mikvah, because after that you know your period is over. You know it's probably not uterine blood. You know you're uncolored anyway, so even if you see a stain, it's going to be uncolored. Okay, so that's also a time where people recommend. And also, you don't want to have an exam during your Shevet Nakiyam, because you don't want to have, even if it's not uterine blood, even if it's Dam Maka, and even if it's Dam Maka on white, and even if a Rav will give you a psak, this is fine, okay? It's Dam Maka, not Dam Nida, because it was a first level pap smear, and I know that it probably wasn't. You don't want to drive yourself crazy. So best is don't go when you're in whites, okay? Go when you're in colors, and either go at the end when you went to the mikvah, or right before you're going to start. And usually also your OB will not want to see you mid-flow, so that's also a time you're not going to go. Okay, so you have to consider also, when am I making my exams? Is this a good time for me? And by the way, when they put you on the table or the exam table and there's that long white sheet, okay, what I do is after the exam, I take it, I scrunch it up into a ball and throw it in the garbage. I don't look at it, even though I know that, like, my doctor will say, there's a little bit of bleeding, just so you know, it was because it's not cervical blood. It's not uterine blood, it's cervical blood or whatever it is. It's you know, from the walls of doing the test. This is not uterine blood. She will tell me because she knows, but I don't want to see it, you know, and I don't want to know. And usually I tell her, don't even tell me. And by the way, in terms of your doctor telling you, that's another thing you want to ask your Rav the first time is, should my doctor be telling me whether she saw blood or not? Some Rabbanim will say, yes, you should know. And some Rabbanim will say, tell your doctor not to tell you. Okay? But these are things you've got to be prepared for in advance when you're going to be having OB-GYN exams. What's happening to me? When's the best time to schedule? And even if I see, again, we are not responsible to look. So put your clothes back on. Don't look at the white. When you wipe yourself after an exam, don't look at the tissue. Don't look at anything. Even if it's not Nida, just don't make yourself crazy that you saw anything. If you're wearing colors, then you don't have to worry about the spotting. You'll see later. But again, we're not looking at it. Yeah.
Like a typical pelvic exam where they just speculate?
You're usually typical pelvic exams, digital exams where they're just looking, you know, where they just put insert, you know, do the speculum with their fingers. Mm-hmm. They're not going into the uterus, the cervix. Yeah.
Two things I've been told obviously ask your Rav, but could make you Nida is insertion of an IUD. Depends how big the IUD is and what they use.
Okay.
And membrane stripping, like to get your
Labor line.
A lot of women think, oh, let me just do it.
Right. But so that could put you into
Nida. Could put you into Nida, and now you're Nida for 2 weeks until you give birth.
Important to know. Now the IUD, you will get different answers from different Rabbanim. I've definitely heard different psak. I think in most cases, an insertion of an IUD does not open the cervix that much to be considered problematic. But again, if a person is going to have an IUD inserted, they definitely want to ask their Rav beforehand. Okay, and the last thing is number 10 just says, what time is it? And it's important to always be aware of the time. And today, with smartphones, we should always, even if we don't wear a watch, we should always know what time it is. And there's never an excuse to say there wasn't a clock, because we always have our phones on us. And if we don't, then congratulations that you don't always have your phone on you. But if you do, like most people, you should know what time it is. And the reason this is important is because if you know your Hefsek Tara is coming up that night, or you think you're going to be ready for it that night, you want to make sure you do it before Shkia. So you want to know what time Shkia is that day, and you want to set an alarm on your clock an hour before. So remind yourself, because we get very busy with life, you know, whatever's happening in our life, work, kids, school, whatever it is, and it happens all the time. Oh, I forgot. And past Shkia. And then you gave yourself a whole nother day for no reason. Okay? And same thing with doing your bedikos on the last day, because we have to do minimum of 1 in 7 on your Shevet Nakiyam. So we want to make sure at least on that seventh day, or even set an alarm for all of your Shevet Nakiyam, a morning alarm and an afternoon alarm, to remind yourself to do your bedikos. Those won't put you into Nida, but if you forget on the first day, you know, it will. And if you forget on the seventh day, it will. So you want to set alarms, and you want to know, when is Shkia? When do I have to do this by? What time is it? And definitely make use of your technology and set alarms. And there are apps, by the way, sunset apps and stuff like that, that will tell you right away when sunset is, and will even set an alarm to go off an hour before sunset if you want to use that, or you could just set your own alarms. Any questions? Yes.
I use mikvahcalendar.com.
Right.
And it asks, like, have you had a baby since your last period? And so now I just had a baby 9 months ago, and so muscle I'm like, tough. Yeah. So like, thank you. So what is the, like, what difference does that make?
Because again, I think 24 months after you have a baby, even if you're not nursing still, you're still considered what's called a menekes, and halacha will be more less stringent for women who first of all are within 24 months of having a baby. So there's room to be more makel for you, even if you're not nursing, but especially if you are. And also because the way that childbirth affects your body, like you want to tell a rav, like I just gave birth, so there, yeah, your things are off. So you want to tell them like this isn't just my regular cycle. I just had a baby, you know, and that definitely goes into the questions. Yes, and definitely goes into consideration. Any other questions? Yeah.
During pregnancy, what's the recommendation for wearing underwear?
And that's right. Stand and Saint Youth counts. Everything counts. And I have definitely seen pregnant women in the mikvah, for sure. Oh, yes, for sure.
Stick with color.
Oh, I thought you meant like pattern and stuff like that. But yeah, stay away from white unless it's your
seven. Patterns come with white in the middle.
Right. Stay away from white. Okay. Stay away from white. But you will not be a nida when you're in childbirth. Usually, I mean, when you're in pregnancy, usually. But it can happen. And I personally have seen pregnant women going to the mikvah because they probably thought, you know, what's the big deal? I'm pregnant anyway. But a woman could definitely spot for a number of reasons and stay away.
And also with that membrane thing, my doctor did that with my first child without asking me. I was like, oh I'm just doing
that's
that.
Not like, okay.
Oh, now I know.
Now you know. Don't you love when they do things and they don't tell you? Okay. But I'm glad you brought that up because now it's more information for me, and I'm glad that I know that, and I want to ask about that. But
And that might just be my rubs.
Right, it might be, but it's definitely interesting and something to think about, so I want to ask about that. So thank you for bringing that up, and thank you for coming. And if really, take my phone number down. You can always contact me, call me, text me, you know, or use the hotline or call a rav, but I am always available, and I'm happy to be there for you as a liaison. Please feel free to text me or call me, and I will help you out if I can. Okay, I'm going to show.